Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to the Coleman Had a Dream podcast. We are going to be talking about football. Wales are playing football again. Happy days. I am joined, as always, by Ruth. How are you doing, Ruth?
Good. What about you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. I'm super excited about this weekend and the game and going to Croatia and everything that's going to be involved in it. It's, you know, we love talking about Welsh football, but since the end of December, I've obviously had nothing to talk about, and everything we have talked about has not been exciting. But it feels a little bit like a new dawn is starting in Welsh football. So I'm delighted to be getting back. Have you thought about where you're going to watch the game on the weekend?
I don't know, actually. I need to check out who's showing it at this end, if anybody, and then work out from there. But it's lunchtime-ish here, so right. I'm hopeful that Saturday I might actually be able to get one of the pubs to put it on, or even if I have to sit in the corner with a laptop, you know, do something like that. So it's a reasonably civilized time for a change. It's not 2 a.m. like it was against Iran, which was not ideal. Really looking forward to it. And I think there's always something very optimistic when qualifying campaigns start, isn't there? And, you know, I think it's a bit tempered at the minute, but I think there is always, you know, you always see the silver linings at this moment, don't you?
Oh, 100%. And I think with the squad that's been announced and all the changes that have been made, you know, four new names coming in and everything, as well as other things to discuss, I think it's actually quite an interesting squad. And it's funny, you know, we look at the names who've left. When you actually look at the names that still remain, there's actually some really, really good football players in there, and there's still people like Brooks, for example, to come back. So, yeah, it's an exciting time, and I'm sure whether I will still retain the same level of excitement, depending on the outcome, at about 11 o'clock on Saturday night, will remain to be seen as we hover around Split trying to find some more beverages, but we will see. Ruth, we're going to start by talking about the obvious stuff. We're a little bit behind the curve as we have obviously waited to do our preview podcast. So I do want to have a quick start, because I know we said we can't do too many more retirements, but here we are again. Obviously, we've got Johnny Williams retired since the last time we spoke, and so, of course, has Chris Gunter. Now, I don't know how many people have been listening to this for the start, but those longer listeners will know that Chris Gunter is very much Ruth's hero. I was going to say celebrity crush then, but I'm not, so that trivializes it a little bit. But yeah, so as a consequence, Ruth, I'm going to let you go first on Chris Gunter.
I'm just tired of talking about retirements. Do we have to do this, really? Just, I mean, it's 2 weeks ago, and I feel like I've just about recovered. Do we have to pull this plaster off the wound right now?
Well, let's say something positive about Gunts, though.
Okay. Well, I mean, he's everything that you would want your international representatives to be, isn't he? He was so involved, so engaged, just so everything. I mean, we talk often about he was the fan on the pitch, but he was that to the extreme, wasn't it? He understood what was happening. The fact that he went up into the crowd after the England game over in Qatar, that obviously the very famous chin up after the England game in Euro 16. I mean, he was just everything. And I think the fact that he was the first of the male players to make 100 caps is just tells you everything you need to know about his dedication. That run he had where he never missed a game. It was like 70 odd games or something. He's just everything you would want. Like, if you were designing your ideal international representative on the football field, he's just everything you'd want.
Love him
to pieces.
You can very much tell, Ruth. I think you're right. I think the thing for me is that he typifies, as much as anything else, what it is to be a Wales fan. I think, and what we want as a Wales player, as you've said, because he doesn't need to be flashy. He's never scored a goal. I don't know how many assists he's got, but I'd imagine you can probably count it on one hand. One of them, of course, being the greatest assist of all time. You know,
one of them was pretty memorable, isn't it?
Yes, just about hanging on into my hungover mind. And I think that's what you want, isn't it? Especially for Wales, that represents Wales. We don't necessarily need all of our players to be Gareth Bale, although that would be nice. We want Chris Gunters. We want people who are hardworking and committed and really care about playing for Wales. And I think Chris Gunter was all of those things. And I think that moment, the self-awareness to have the to do the chin-up gesture against England in the Euros, I think is really important, actually, because it's obviously a great iconic moment and great iconic photograph, but also it's a moment which I think was probably really quite pivotal for Welsh football in that in that tournament, where we did actually think, when the players talked the next day about, you know, what England game, I think they meant it, because I think the players instantly realised, this is gone now, we've got to get our chins up, this is still in our hands, there's no point moping. And I think that was a really powerful gesture that really worked on and off the pitch, and I think that is what Chris Gunter was all about for Wales, isn't it? I think he was really effective off the on the pitch, sorry, but I think he also carried a lot of weight with the fans, and the things he did off the pitch mattered too, and I think that's that's really, really important. Well, let's also talk, Ruth, about Johnny Williams, who was also retired since the last time we spoke. There's a few question marks, I think, perhaps more so about Johnny, because he's still only 29. I know he's had his injury concerns, but I feel I was still, despite what some people thought, I still thought there was something he could offer to the squad. There was still something he could bring to the table. And at that age, I think you've got a good band of brand, sorry, if that's the right word, of being experienced, but also having enough youthfulness left in his legs to kind of offer us something for us. And he's obviously done great stuff, appreciate it's in League Two, but he's done well for Swindon, and you know, he's someone who still could carry a threat for us. So I was a little bit surprised, but I mean, still someone again who just seems like such a lovely bloke. And a couple of podcasts ago when we were talking about Paul Mullin, we were talking about English people representing Wales and the wider diaspora, and where you where you're from actually not really mattering that much, as long as it means something to you. I think if you are ever confused about what the relevance of English people playing for Wales and what you want them to be, just go and draw them a picture of Johnny Williams. Like he typified everything that we want from that type of person, who's a heritage player, if you like. And I think for me, and I'm sure it will be, it's quite weird, but that goal he scored against Bulgaria, you know, aside from it being a ridiculously good finish, I love where he slid into the corner and everyone just shouting, "Johnny Williams," at him over and over and over again. I thought it was amazing. And that's one of my favourite ones. And that was also followed by the great moment where Joe, everyone was jogging back to the halfway line and Joe Rogers like, "Fucking calm down, mate." that was a terrible impression, but you get the point. But yeah, still, what a great moment. Anyway, you know, superb player, I think, for us, and someone who's made a real difference and impact for us. But again, someone who you want to see representing your country, isn't it?
Yeah, undoubtedly. I think his retirement might be the surprise one for me. I think he still does have something to add to a squad. I think he has, like you say, some experience off the bench that sometimes can be really, really valuable. And I think with the turnover in the squad, I think it's a pity to lose someone with his sort of impact off the field as well, amongst all of the other departures. So I am surprised, because yes, admittedly, it's Division Two, but I think he's had a very good season. I wonder whether there is maybe more background to his injury woes. He's had a very injury-prone career. I wonder whether there is more stuff going on there that, you know, perhaps medically there's some recommendation that he just kind of tones back the amount of playing he's doing, and a two-week break. Sorry, he won't get a break now, will he? Because Division Two keep going. So it's just an interesting loss. I think it's one of the surprise losses within the four of them that have retired.
I wonder if perhaps Rob Page and Johnny Williams had a conversation where he had said, "Look, I know these people are leaving, but I still need to bring the younger players through. You'll be part of my squad, but your role won't change." I wonder if Johnny's thought, "Well, do you know what? I'm going around, I'm travelling and play. Well, I'm travelling away. I'm, you know, risks jeopardising my place in my club team. I might play 10 minutes here and there. You know, this is not going to be my opportunity to do what I want to do at international level." And he's just thought, okay, well, fair enough, maybe enough's enough. And I think similar to Chris Gunter, actually, I wonder if Rob Page has said to him, "Look, mate, you're not going to play, but if you want to come away and be part of the coaching staff, maybe that's a better way for you to be involved still." So I wonder if these decisions have also been made with Rob Page. I suppose we will never know. But I agree with what you've said about Johnny in terms of his injuries and the impact that must have had on him, especially now he is doing so well at club level. And I think that's one thing that is hard to judge the impact of, I guess, in terms of a player's career. Because you think about Johnny, he's, you know, he played at Crystal Palace, he went on loan to a load of different places when he was younger. I mean, he even went up to Sunderland, God bless him. So, you know, he's had a rough time of it. Since then, of course, he's travelled around to different places. He's been to Ipswich, I think he went, and a couple of different spots. And I think, you know, I also wonder if this is the first time in his career he's found a proper settled, you know, personal situation, and just thinks that the possibility of going away for 10 days at a time and not really playing and not really being able to contribute is risks unsettling what he has at home, which is also, you know, a possibility when we think about these things. So maybe it's all a combination of those things. Who knows?
Yeah, no, I mean, you feel for the players that are in that dilemma, don't you? When they must feel they can still contribute, but I think for Gunce particularly, the writing's kind of on the wall. The writing's on the wall in terms of his involvement. What's this situation with his coaching involvement then? Tell me a bit more about that.
Aaron Ramsey in his press conference today said that Gunter is going to be involved as part of the coaching setup. He didn't really elaborate on specific of what that was, but he said he's got his A and his B license already. So that was, you know, probably why he was able to get on board. I would say in the first instance, I mean this in a obviously flippant way, but I think he'll probably be there more as a go-between between the new coaching staff that he's got in and the players. I think he'll be more of a setting out cones type than a taking the session. Yeah. And I don't mean that I'm taking the piss, but I think that's what his role will be. I think they obviously wanted that extra experience around and about the place. And I think that Gunce brings that.
There's been a lot of turnover in the lads involved with the under 21s as well, hasn't there? There's been quite a graduation, an age group graduation, quite markedly in this cycle. And I wonder whether some outreach there as well might be a valuable use of his experience.
Yeah, I think so, because, again, I don't think we've mentioned this on the last one. It's funny, you know, Ruth, how we go through these cycles where some weeks we're desperately trying to find things to talk about. And other times, just
don't
like...
Don't put it like that.
Other weeks, you're like, bloody hell, could you not have done this 2 weeks ago, lads? We've got too much this week. Yeah, the last thing we need is a too fuller schedule of things to talk about. Because obviously Neil Taylor is working with the under-21s now as well. So, again, maybe he could have a role kind of involved in that. I think eventually he will find a more permanent role for himself within the Welsh setup, as I'm sure Gareth Bale will at some point in the future, because that has been referenced this week as well. So hopefully all of those things come to pass. I'm glad that Gunce is still involved. And I hope that, you know, there's a good send off for all of those players at the Latvia game. I can't make the Latvia game, unfortunately, at home, but I think I hope that those people have a chance to be recognised, because they absolutely deserve it for what they've given Welsh football. So fingers crossed there's a good reception for them. But of course, before we go to Latvia, we have to go to Croatia. Now, before we do an in-depth chat on the squad, on the opposition and all that, as we often do here, let's talk about the squad. Before we talk about the squad, Ruth, I just want to remind everyone that they can support us at buymeacoffee.com/Coleman's Dream, where you can make a little donation to help keep this podcast free and keep us going. You can also go to bagsybags.com and use the code CHAD10 to get 10% off everything and anything that Bagsy has in his fantastic online store, from bags and mugs and cups and t-shirts and all sorts of Welsh-related stuff. Go to bagsybags.com and have a look. Right, Ruth, let's start with the four debutants. I think those are probably the most notable new names in the squad, so to speak, or the most notable call-ups. Jordan James, Ollie Cooper and Nathan Broadhead. What are your thoughts on them, and do you see any of them getting any game time?
No, I'm pleased to see them being called up. I think it's there's an interesting turnover in the squad, isn't there? When you look at the World Cup squad versus this one, obviously we've had the four retirees, but there's also five players that went to Qatar who were, you know, perfectly open to being called up at the minute. Cabango, Matt Smith, Levitt, Mark Harris and Colwell. Interesting to see him with the under-21s. So actually, there's 9 players who went to Qatar who aren't in this squad, which is that's a big chunk of your players turning over. It's, you know, it's more than a third turnover compared to Qatar. So I was a bit surprised about that. But I am glad to see us bringing in some promising future talent, which obviously you want them to be immersed in the squad. You want them to get used to the setup. You want them to understand what it is to be part of our squads, to be part of our organization. I think that's really important. And do I expect to see any of the 4 of them get any play time? No, not really. I mean, perhaps Ollie Cooper might be at the front of that list out of the 4 of them, might get a few minutes perhaps in a Latvia game. But I don't see at this point. I think it's much more about embedding them in the squad and them being part of the arrangements and, you know, and growing into roles.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think you're right. I don't think any of that. I could maybe see Broadhead getting on, you know, mm-hmm. if we need a goal maybe against Latvia or something. Similarly, Ollie Cooper, he's you know, done well the last couple of months. So maybe mm-hmm. I don't think the other two would get a sniff, but I think it's important that they're there for the experience. Mm-hmm. Dylan Levitt, I think Ruth was injured recently, and I think he's out for a long spell to give him
yeah, it's a longer injury than they were talking about initially, isn't it?
Yeah. But you're absolutely spot on. It's a huge turnover. I wonder if there's something going on. I you know, again, we speculate here a lot, but Cabango was a weird one for me. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not exactly flush at the back, especially now, you know, obviously we'll come to it that Ben Davis has now gone injured. I appreciate he's a left back, but he can also play centre-half as well. And it has that versatility. He's been replaced by Morgan Fox, who, to be fair to him, is also having a good season. He could count himself perhaps a tad unlucky not to get called up in the first place. Yeah. Overall, I think, you know, that it is a big turnover. I think it was needed. I think, you know, people like Matt Smith, who've, you know, done things that we've needed to in certain games at certain times, but have never really kind of burst onto the scene and had an effect on our team and on our squad. And, you know, it's not just their level. You know, we say Joe Morel as our example all the time of someone who's playing a little bit further down the leagues but still contributes massively to Welsh football. It's never really quite happened in the same way for whatever reason for Matt Smith. There's a few others there, of course, you know, that we've not really talked about, like Rabbi Matondo and stuff like that, who are also someone else who's been in and around it for a while, but also missed out. And you wonder if time is ticking for them. I think the Colwell one is an interesting one as well, because obviously he's gone down to the 21s. He's obviously part of the Wales setup. I don't think he needs, you know, any more time around that, but I think it's a good opportunity to get game time. I think they realised he wasn't going to play for the first team. So as a consequence of that, he's gone down there and I think he'll get some game time. And I think that's a sensible decision by all involved.
I think it is, given how little Cardiff-based play time he's getting. So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I was a little bit surprised, and again, I don't know a full enough about the situation, but you know, Mark Harris is obviously out of the squad after making the plane to Qatar. So yeah, there is a bit all changed, but I suppose he's not really been doing much. He's not been scoring goals, and Tom Bradshaw, who's the other person who's come in, he scored 14 goals, sorry, in 33 games in the Championship, 9 in his last 14, which is great stats really. So I'm delighted for Tom Bradshaw. I think it's 5 years since he last got a call up. So delighted for him to be involved. Very much deserved that place, doesn't he?
Yeah, with stats like that, it is a bit of a no-brainer. Just, you know, and I know there's some reservations about his age, but I think at this point it's kind of needs must, and we're not scoring goals, and we've lost some of our key sources of scoring goals. So I think it's important to have some options in that department, even if it's just for, you know, from now till the summer of 2024. I don't think it matters if that's all we're looking at Tom Bradshaw. It's just we need help now.
Yeah, I agree. I think he very much deserves it. He's been in great form. He's made all the right noises. And he doesn't, like you say, he doesn't have to be here forever, but he needs to contribute and score some goals. And I think as a consequence, he's definitely the right call there. Obviously, Mullin, we'll not spend too much time on that. But he didn't get called up. The thing I wanted to reference with this is that in an interview, Rob Page said he was considered for this squad, mm-hmm. but they decided not to bring him on the basis that there's going to be a training camp in May, I think it is, for non-Premier League players. And I think they were looking at having a look at Paul Mullin then rather than mm-hmm. this call-up, which I think is interesting that he's kind of referenced the media chat about it and the hype, if you like, that's gone mm-hmm. around it. I remember when we were talking about the 21s there, Jeffcott is someone who's now drifted out with that due to his age, etc. But he, you know, at the time there was a lot of chat around him, and you and I were certainly making those noises. Proved right yet again, and he's someone who, you know, has not really gone on and made the cut. But one thing we talked about at the time was that he was never referenced by Ryan Giggs at the time, and it was never that was never brought in conversation. So I was really glad to see that Page is kind of addressing these issues head on. He's not kind of letting anyone die wondering sort of thing. He knows mm-hmm. what he wants, and I'd imagine he may have spoken even to Paul Mullin. But the fact that he's had this conversation, he said this in public, he's talked about these things openly, I think is important, because it gives us clarity as fans, and I think it puts him in a strong position as well to so that it's you know, the questions that people aren't constantly asking him as well. So I understand the decision, but I thought that was being handled really, really well.
Yeah, no, I think it's important to just sit on these kind of stories sometimes, isn't it?
And
just make the point, right? It's not the time, it's not the camp, but it's not off the table. And that, I think that's a perfectly legitimate place for Paige to be. So why not just say that, you know? It's not, you don't have to have smoke and mirrors in these sorts of things.
Yeah, I agree. And I think a lot of the things, I think the fans just want that openness and clarity, don't they? I think you just want to know where you stand and what's going on. And as you know, we are someone who, you know, derive a lot of pleasure from arguing with each other about football. I think, you know, I think that equally having that final answer on the table is helpful for all involved as well. So think that was very, very well handled. On the squad front, Ruth, obviously the big talking point was Aaron Ramsey as captain. The person he was kind of up against, for want of a better word, is Ben Davis. First of all, what are your thoughts on that decision in regards to his playing, how he plays, I guess, because I think this has been famously discussed before, and admittedly he was much younger, but the captaincy kind of weighed on him before. Harry Burton has asked us, do we agree with the captain's armband going to Rambo? With the injury to Davis, of course, it doesn't matter so much now, but who do we feel deserve the armband? So I thought that was quite an interesting question, because there was only really a couple of options, but I also think it's worth referencing the impact that it had on Ramsey before, and obviously it's a less of a question now because Davis is injured, but I think the point is, the wider point is still valid.
I think it's interesting in the sort of wider context of Ramsey and the sort of noises that he's been making and the status that he now has within this squad. I think he's backing himself to be the man and to get us to the Euros. Yeah. And it will be he will be the driving force behind it. And I actually admire that, because it would be very easy for him to be stepping back right now, but he's not. Yeah. He's grabbed the ball by the horns, and he's kind of fronted up, and he's, you know, we are going to be his squad in that sense, both in terms of his sort of attitude of taking on that mantle of being the guy, but also very publicly with the captaincy, where we all know it didn't go great the first time. And I think there were a host of reasons for that. And he was given it very, very young, without all the other stuff that was going on.
True.
I think from that point of view, he is in a very different place. We are in a different place. We're asking a different set of responsibilities for him. So I haven't got concerns in the sense of it didn't go great first time, and sort of an inference that it won't go great this time. I think that's joining dots that don't exist. But what I am interested in is this sort of almost like switching his attitude, that he's been somewhat playing second fiddle to you know who. We know there's games where it's been Ramsey that's got us through, and you only have to look at the Euros and the the Hungary game, for example, when we were qualifying for the second time for the Euros, you know, we know that there are games where he has been the man. But I do think it's interesting that he's sort of fronted up and is taking on this mantle now. I do think it puts an onus on him. I think it puts an onus on him when we've got very few other senior players in the squad.
Yeah.
I think it's a real pity that Davies isn't going to be there this time round. I think there's a kind of gap between sort of Ramsey and maybe someone like Connor Roberts, who's got a good deal of sort of like seniority within the group, just in terms of his kind of persona and how people turn to him and how he takes the lead on some of the social stuff. So I think it's a pity that we're minus Davies for that reason, amongst most footballing reasons. But I am really interested to see how this works for Aaron, because I think this is a kind of, he's taking on, like I said, a mantle status that hasn't quite been there before. And I do admire the fact that he's stepping up and just taking it on head on.
Yeah, I think there may be, I may be overthinking things, but I think, like you say, very often Bale has been the go-to one. And I do wonder if, you know, there's little things that kind of, I don't know, dangle in his mind a little bit, perhaps, where he's thinking, can I be the one who does it? Can I do the one, you know, can I do what Gareth Bale has done? You know, when we lost that game to Ireland, of course, in 2000 and whatever it was, 17, obviously Allen and Bale weren't there. Ramsey, try as he may, couldn't quite kind of turn the game. So I wonder if there's that element is in his mind, if he can be the talisman and the go-to. I may be overthinking that, but I do wonder if that's why he's continuing.
No, I think there's an ego part to it. I think he wants to be that man.
Yeah.
You know, I think he wants to take us there. And I just think it's very admirable, because it would have been very easy for him to be backing off. I'm sure the fact that he's having more than a reasonable season with Nice, and that, and you know how they're using him, they're not overusing him, and I mean, you know, perhaps that just all mentally puts him in a better place as well.
I agree. I also wonder if he has looked at Gareth Bale and Joe Allen, and who they've kind of forced themselves to be fit, if you like, and ready for the Euro, for the World Cup, sorry. And he thinks, well, I did that, and I didn't give the best of myself, but he knows he's got more to give. You know, Bale and I would say, to a lesser extent, to be fair, Alan, but Bale certainly looked like he knew that this was it for him. This was his last hurrah. Whereas Ramsey was so desperate to get about, and, you know, he had the great running stats that we talked about during the tournament, and, you know, it just didn't happen for him. And he's thought to himself, well, bloody hell, you know, I've still got something else left in me here. So I do wonder if that, like you, as you mentioned, the ego part of it, a level of Jess Fishlock about it, actually, in a way, where, you know, the younger people, the older people around her are retiring as well, but she's still thinking, right, okay, one more time, here we go. And I think she wants to have that on her CV. And in the same way, I wonder if Aaron wants to have it on his CV, that he's kind of captain Wales to a tournament. I think overall, fundamentally, it doesn't matter. We talk about the leadership group, if you like, that are responsible from the player side.
Yeah.
So ultimately, I don't think it hugely matters who wears the armband on the day. But Nathan H. 1610 on Twitter has asked, do you think it matters, sort of thing, who, if there's a vice captain, and with Davis now out, who will be the vice captain? Because obviously he was the vice captain and was named as such. And I wondered if it was something that we could be looking at. And again, it varies, a symbolic thing, but would be a sign of who the next full-time captain might be in the future. I wonder whether someone like Ethan Ampadu might step into that role.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see who, if someone is nominated notionally, for these two games with Ben Davies not being available. But and I think the fact that Davies is vice captain is a kind of nod to who's next, isn't it? I think there's a longevity, hopefully, to Ben's play, which is just gives us a few more years than we can look at with Aaron. And I think they're lining them up, and I think Ethan would probably be next on that list.
Yeah, I agree. He would be my next captain. Well, here we are. We're talking about who's going to be captain and whatnot in the games that are to come.
Yep.
We are, of course, playing Croatia. I feel like we've been actually putting this off, in fact. we are playing Croatia. I'm going to give you a couple of stats, Ruth, at the start of our preview.
Okay.
They last lost a home qualifier, not a Nations League game, but they last lost a home qualifier for a tournament in October 2013. that was almost 10 years ago, everyone. From the going back from the 2022 qualifiers, since the 2022 World Cup qualifiers started, in all of the games they've had before the actual World Cup started, they've scored 29 goals and then scored another 8 goals, obviously, in the World Cup itself before finishing runners-up. In all of that time, they conceded just 9 goals, including 7 clean sheets and clean sheet victories over the French and the Danes. They have not lost in split since 2020, which was a Nations League game against Portugal. On the upside, they did get beaten by Austria in a Nations League game at home, so there is some hope. Mm-hmm. I would describe that set of statistics as troubling.
That's one way of putting it. Yeah, I mean, you don't head a Nations League group that's made of France, Denmark, and Austria and not have something about you. You don't get to, you don't play that like they have in World Cups and not have something about you. You don't have those sorts of statistics, as you said. And I think we were probably expecting it to be a bit of a rebuild after the World Cup, but you look at the squad and there's next to no turnover. They did most of their rebuilding, in fairness, after the 2018 World Cup, didn't they? And they're still kind of hanging on to that. I mean, 22 of the World Cup squad are back, so that's no turnover to speak of. I mean, what can you say?
Yeah. In short,
they are for a country of the size that they are immensely impressive as a footballing nation. I think they. You know, there's countries 10 times their size that would aspire to have the success that they do on a football field.
Absolutely. And when you think, I can't remember the exact date, but it wasn't till like the early 90s that they were even their own country. I'm stealing this from Edgefoth listening this morning, but I didn't realise how much of the squad of the Yugoslavia and the USSR and everything else were made up of what would become Croatia, you know, in the late 90s and late 80s and early 90s as well. So, you know, a huge footballing tradition and a fantastic nation. And as you say, something certainly for a country the size of Wales to aspire to. I think it's worth...
Do you want some stats about us, which are actually... surprisingly nice as well.
Oh, yes, please, Ruth.
In our last 40 games that are qualifiers for tournaments, so it kind of takes the Nation Leagues off the table handily, but in our last 40 games as qualifiers for a tournament, we've only lost 5.
I'm happy with that.
As it happens, we've lost our last 8, but, you know, maybe, you know, stats... stats, let's just, you know, massage them to suit us. I mean, I hate to admit it, Dave, but I'm probably at the point where I'd almost settle for us not getting a shellacking in split, which is a horrible state of play. But I don't know, part of me is like, I think it's good we're playing Croatia away first, because if we're going to be, in inverted commas, a mess because we've got a new plan, we've got new players, we've got, you know, a new coaching team, a new plan, then probably all of those things, in theory, should be at their worst in this game. So at least put them on the table in a game that you're probably not going to get anything out of anyway, as opposed to, you know, at home against Armenia, where you've, you know, there's clearly only one acceptable result at that point. So part of me wonders whether it's good time in playing Croatia from that point of view. I think it's interesting that we've got these two games which are, they're about as opposite as you can get in terms of what we need from them.
Yeah, true.
Really, aren't they? And I think that is quite interesting. Like, what does that mean in terms of how we approach the window?
I mean,
you've got one game away against clearly the group favourites where... you know, if we somehow eke out a draw, that would be a miracle. And if we don't get thrashed, I think that would actually be pretty positive against, you know, a Latvian team that we've got to we've got to have a good win against. And I think the needs of those two are just make the window quite interesting.
I totally agree. First of all, phenomenal use of the word shellacking. I enjoyed that enormously. Do you know what? I totally agree with you. I think to an extent, I think we can almost treat this game as a friendly. I think, and I don't mean that to be negative in terms of expectation. I just mean that they've got such a good record. They've not lost a home qualifier in almost 10 years. That is mad. And, you know, to look at it from that perspective, you know, to go out there and get a draw would be a phenomenal result, you know, and to not get horribly turned over would also be a decent result. And maybe not a decent result, but a decent outcome. And I think back to when we started the last qualifying campaign and we went out to Belgium and we scored that first goal and we lost 3-1 on the night. But actually, I think you could come away from that game saying, well, do you know what? There was actually a lot to be positive about there. We scored a brilliant goal. Yeah. We were in the game. Two silly mistakes cost us. We had a lot of the ball. We had chances. They scored the winner, I think, from a penalty, if memory serves. So, like, there was enough to be a positive about there. We thought, well, actually, 3-1 doesn't sound great. But actually, we did okay. And we tried a new plan. We tried to have that false nine. I think it was Harry Wilson did that role. And, you know, there was an element there where you look like, well, okay, I can live with that. And that's how I'm approaching this. I think if we go out there and stick five at the back and we try and hang on to grim life for a point, I think that there's a, you know, if that happens, okay, great. But we're supposed to be, implementing a new style, which we will want to use against Latvia. So, you know, we need to give that a go. If that's going to be the style, then that's what we're going to commit to. And then that's what we need to have a go at. So for me, I would look at it almost like a friendly, like I say. And honestly, I think you're right. It is a good time to play them. First game of the group, it means we've got all of the other group games to play. Everyone else has that, you know, what will hopefully be a dead game, if you like, where they have to go to Croatia and play them. And we will have dealt with that in the first game. And you never know, you know, could catch them cold. You know, they are an incredibly impressive team, but it'll be in the middle of a congested fixture schedule for a lot of their players who are playing, big competitions week in, week out. Got the Champions League. You know, there's a chance that they could be overcooked. I'm saying that because there's going to be some of our players who are criminally undercooked, but let's pretend that that's not true. I think there's an element of that. One of the big questions we've got here before we go into too much detail about, I was going to say tactics, but in terms of, you know, what we think might happen in the game. We've been asked a question by, he says, desperately padding, by someone called Will, who tweets from Gower Salt Marsh Lamb. I would love some of that lamb. Would you consider resting Brennan and Aaron for the Croatia game to guarantee their availability for the must-win Latvia game? And I thought that was a really interesting question and perspective, because I don't think I would Aaron, maybe Brennan, given he's had fitness injuries issues of late. But I thought it's an interesting perspective and an interesting way to look at it, because then there is a good chance for someone like Harry Wilson to come in, or there is a good chance, for someone like Dan James, who needs game time, to take part, depending on obviously formations and whatnot. But I thought it was an interesting question.
I can see that being the case with Brennan Johnson, because I think he's just doubtful enough for the Croatia game with the knock he's been carrying that might be a sort of automatic, as it were. He might just not be ready. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if we don't see him until the Tuesday game. Based on what I was saying earlier about what the point that Aaron is trying to make, I think he would be battling not playing the lead team in the group. I think,
yeah, 100%.
I think if he hadn't been playing so regularly for Nice, then I think the cakes might be better. But we're not often we've been putting something on the table in front of these players that they haven't done for months in terms of two games in 4 days. But actually, that's not the state of play for him at the minute. He's been playing reasonably regularly in decent minutes. I know there was a knock a couple of weeks ago where he came off, but you know, basically, he's been playing at least 70 minutes a game. And I don't think we have to cotton wool him in quite the way that we might have done.
No, I agree. I think with Brennan Johnson, I think he played the full 90 minutes against Eddie Howe's Black and White Army on Friday night. And, you know, looked sharp, had a chance kind of relatively late in the game and still looked sprightly and got round Sven Botman, I think it was, before having a good shot. So he actually looks like he's all right now. I wonder if there may be a bit of a deal done. I wonder if he might only play a half or something like that. But ultimately, you know, I think we want Brennan to be our go-to man, don't we? That's our take here, our outlook here. So I think if he's going to be our go-to man, he's going to be our new starlet, then you can't go into these games without your full strength team, because then you will get, in your words, a shellacking.
No, I see that argument. I just wonder whether, given things have been a bit sort of dicey for him of late, whether it might just be felt play safe and have him for Tuesday.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I would also like to think that, with that said, that we could beat Latvia without him, given they are 133rd in the world. Let's just finish talking about Croatia first.
Sorry, Dave, before you go, that's actually a good point, that if he's only going to have one game, which game would he be more valuable to us? And there is a legitimate argument that he could make much more of a difference to the Croatia game. So that's a kind of taking a different point of view from Will's original question, is if we're only going to have one game, do we actually throw him into the Croatia game?
Yeah, I mean, that would be my response. I think if we can beat Latvia without him. And if he is any sort of doubtful and we don't start him in the Latvia game, but we're desperate for a goal with 20 minutes to go, we can bring him on and he can make a difference there. So that would be my take. But obviously, as is regular pointed out on this podcast, what do I know? I think the game is going to be won in midfield. I think they retain the ball so well. They play a 4-3-3, regardless, basically, of who they're playing against. They played it through the World Cup. And that kind of midfield rotation, obviously bossed by Luka Modric, who is quite good, I've heard. I think is...
You've heard his name before. Have you?
Yeah, I knew it rang a bell somewhere when I googled him and saw he played for Tottenham. I thought that must have been it. But yeah, I think that's where the game's won and lost. I'd hope we don't go for a five at the back. I'm hoping, and this is where I'm going to ask you for your starting lineup, Ruth. I'm hoping that we play a 4-2-3-1. I think for a couple of reasons. One is, I think that gives us a chance to be positive and attacking. I think it gives us a chance to get our best players on the pitch in their best position. And I also think it minimises areas of the pitch where I think we are limited. And I think that's the key at the moment, especially with where I would say our central midfield options are a little bit tight. I think, obviously, Ben Davies is out of the equation now, but if I name my back five, Ruth, and you tell me
Can I just do something? Can we just have a slightly different discussion first?
Go on.
Talking about holding midfielders, do you think we have ended up with Joe Morel as our only truly natural defensive midfielder in the squad?
No. I think that Ethan Ampadu is a holding midfielder, and I know people prefer him as a centre-half, but for me, I think his
I mean, I use the word natural very deliberately, because I'm not saying he can't do it. He's eminently capable of doing it. I just wonder whether we've put ourselves in a position of not having enough choices for those holding midfield places.
Well, there's two things I'd say there. One is, I do think that I do think Ethan Ampadu is a natural holding midfielder. And I know people like to see him play elsewhere, but I think he is capable of playing centre-half. But I think his best position, in my opinion, is a holding midfielder. And I'll say that for three reasons. One is, I think he passes and keeps the ball in a way that I don't think anyone else, now that Joe Allen has gone, is capable of doing on our team. He's physical, he's nasty, and I think that is something you need to be in that part of the pitch. And he's a natural leader. He's always talking. Even since his debut, he's had that attitude where he's been, you know, G-ing people up around him. So for me, I think that is his natural position. I appreciate he's capable of doing other stuff, but I think, you know, he's played there for Spezia quite a lot this season. I think you're right in the sense that if one of those two gets injured... You know, I appreciate then it becomes a slightly different situation. And I don't know whether, you know, that was where, you know, I said about Matt Smith before, would he have been worth having in there just, just as a security blanket almost. But mm-hmm. I suppose if Jordan James, for example, is someone who I know is not a natural holding midfielder per se, but he's a more of a box-to-box type, but if he's someone who can come in and do a role if we need to there, then so be it. Because ultimately you have to learn at some point, don't you? You have to get that experience. And, you know, my God, I hope it's not against Croatia for his sake. But he is a good player. He has been having good game time in the Championship. So, you know, if that is what it comes to, that's what it comes to. But I think the other thing is that I think is important in that conversation is something that we have avoided this time, and having just said this, I'm going to contradict myself, but I think it would be easy to have picked Matt Smith there. I think it would have been easy mm-hmm. to go and look at other people who could have come in and done a short-term job where we've actually thought, we've made the conscious decision, in my view, that we're going to, these are the lads we're having, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to crack on. It makes me believe that we're probably not going to play two holding midfielders because then if one of them gets injured, then we have to change the whole shape. But I would still prefer us to play that way. But that's by the by. But to answer your question ultimately, yes, I do think we are light in that area. But I do also think we have mm-hmm. two very, very talented holding midfielders as well.
Yeah, okay. All right. I think a different interpretation of natural for Ampadu comes into it. But I am concerned about how thin we are in that position. Overall.
Yes, yeah. True. Although I've just realised actually that we were saying I was surprised that Ben Cabanga wasn't in earlier. He is in the squad. That's absolutely my mistake. So solid work as always from Coleman Had a Dream. So let's look at that, Ruth. My back five would be Danny Ward in goal. I know he got dropped for Leicester on the weekend, but he's been playing regularly. Mm-hmm. Not brilliantly, but regularly, and it's more than Hennessy. And then I would be playing Nico at left back in the absence of Ben Davis. I would play Connor Roberts at right back, and I would play Rodden and Mepham in the middle of the back four. Would you agree with that, or do you switch anything around?
If we're looking at a potential back four as versus the great debate of a potential back five, obviously with Ben Davis out, then I think those two Central G kind of pick themselves at that point, don't they? Based on there's only really a support from Lockyer potentially, and I think the fact that Rodden and Mepham have played together across quite a few games lately, often as part of a three, admittedly. But I think that back four, assuming we're going down the back four route, and there's no Ben Davies available, I think they kind of pick themselves at this point.
Yeah, because even if it's a back five, I still think it's those same players. And then it would be either Lockyer, well, realistically, Lockyer or Cabango then who would come in. Yeah. So, you know, yeah. I don't see that really changing things, depending on how it goes on anyway. Out of interest, I'm saying I'm picking this as a 4-2-3-1. Would you do the same, or would you do something differently?
I think for this particular game, I might have it slightly more as a 4-3-2-1, but we're just arguing about semantics there. I think Ramsey is going to end up being, relatively speaking, fairly deep because of the strength of their three in midfield. So I could see it being more of a sort of central three with Ramsey as the point of that three, as it were. Yeah. So a less distinct two and a more obvious three for this particular game. And then, you know, on the odd occasion that Ramsey go, and that's a little bit more how he's been playing for Nice as well, isn't it? Just that slightly, touched deeper on the field. But broadly speaking, I think we're on the same page here.
Then I would say the next step up three would be Ramsey kind of in the middle of that, as you say, kind of up and down. And then I think I would go Dan James on one side and I would go for Brennan Johnson on the other side.
So are you going Ampadu and Morel?
Sorry, yes.
Yeah? Okay. I think it's James that's the interesting discussion point because he's played so little. And it's, I don't know. He's the one I've got most questions about.
Here's the thing, though. I think you're right, but here's the thing, right? What's the alternative? Because realistically, there isn't one. Because it's not like Harry Wilson's banging the door down. I think you can't not start Brennan all being well because he's pretty much the only person in that group who's playing every week. I think the alternative went then would be looking at someone like Zorba Thomas. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I wonder. Wes I actually Byrne, wonder whether sure. Thomas is the closest. I wonder. His move for Blackburn's gone pretty well, in fairness.
Yeah.
And I wonder whether he might be the closest to you know, the closest to pushing James. I'm with you. I still can't see them changing it. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because this team, you know, that 11 that you're talking about, it's actually not very different from what we've been doing, is no, it?
Exactly.
Were you hoping for something that was a bit more of a change-up? Or do you think that we're just kind of subbing for Gareth and Joe at this point?
Maybe, but I also think, you know, we just talked out there about the midfield options. I don't see that there's many other viable options anyway.
No.
So that solves itself. The question I would ask would be whether we go five at the back.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because we do have a good options at wing back, we have four in Burns, Thomas, and then obviously Connor Roberts and Nico Williams. So there's some depth and variation to be had there.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see that. I think the problem with that is that if we do that, you need someone who's a non-stop dynamic number nine type, and that's not Kiefer Moore. Mm-hmm. He is hard working, mm-hmm. but he's not that kind of link up player. He's a hold up man basically. Do you think
that might be a reason to put Bradshaw in?
I just don't. The thing is, maybe, but I just think that's an unnecessary roll of the dice, because ultimately,
mm-hmm.
Kiefer Moore has been probably our most important player over the last 18 months. He may not have scored all the goals, but he kind of knits us together. And I think that's another reason why I see the 4-2-3-1 working, is because it gets everyone in their best positions. And I think as a follow-on point from that, I was going to write this down, but I didn't, which is helpful. But another reason I've gone for that is because I think looking ahead, I think there's an opportunity there for us to have at least one good replacement in every single position. Because mm-hmm. let's assume for a sec that Ben Davis is fit and can play centre-half with Joe Rodden. We can have Nico Williams, or we can have Norrington Davis can play left-back. We can switch that around, and Nico can play right-back if Connor can't play, and Norrington Davis can play left-back, and Ben Davis can switch around. Like, there's options and alternatives there. Admittedly, the holding two midfielders is where we lack depth. But then as a 10, you can have Ramsey or Harry Wilson. On one side, you can have James or Brooks when he's fit. You can have Moore or Bradshaw up front, or whatever kind of variation of that you want to have. And then depending on what you want to do, you can have Brennan on one side, and then, okay, I suppose that's maybe where slightly my two for each position falls down ever so slightly. But, you know, there's enough players in there and enough players you can rotate that I think works where everyone's playing in their best position. And I think that's something we haven't actually done for quite a while. So I think that, for me, is why that would be the best long-term plan. Because ultimately, the point here is, especially with the absence of Bale, is to get your best players on the pitch in their best positions. And I think that 4-2-3-1 does that for me. I would be disappointed, to be honest, if we went five at the back, because I really don't think that gets the best out of everyone. But again, you know, as always.
Yeah, I think it just feels like it leaves us short-staffed elsewhere. And I think in this particular game against Croatia, you've got to have three strong in the midfield because of their strength.
Yeah.
One of the things I like about that particular formation is you can either ask Ramsey to play slightly more like an eight and be dropping back a bit if that works for the opposition, or, you know, if we were putting out that 11 against Latvia, I don't think we will quite, but if we were putting out that 11 against Latvia, you'd be asking him to step up and be very much a 10, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And I like the fact that that doesn't make dramatic changes, but it enables you to have some versatility there.
I agree. And I think that works moving forward as well, because I think Dan James is trusted for his work rate and energy and effort.
Yeah.
And I think he can do that from a slightly different position against Croatia, for example, but then take the shackles off a bit against Latvia and kind of let him go. Equally the same with Johnson, who doesn't do as much tracking back. That's slightly deeper role is not his natural position. But again, we need someone to be a threat and an out ball and get up there with Kiefer Moore, and he will kind of drop in when we need him to. So I think it again allows us to go for things a little bit more. I remember when we played Croatia away in Prague, when, you know, towards the end of that game when it was 2-2, we brought everyone on and there was little kind of subtle tweaks and changes here and there. We praised Rob Page on the night for being ballsy and going for it. And I think this also allows us to do that without changing the back six of the back four and then the two holders. We can kind of be a bit more attacking and put more people alongside Kiefer Moore in and around him without changing the defensive core of the team. So I also like the flexibility in how it allows us to go at a game if we need to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think we're very much on the same page. But do you think Page is going to go for a four, or do you think he'll stick with a five at the back?
It's a tricky one. My gut feeling is I think he'll have to. He's talked so much about setting out his stall and a new plan and all that.
Yeah.
I think if he to start with what's not going to be the actual plan moving forward, perhaps, and by going with a five, I think would be a bit of an own goal for him. So I think he'll start with a four. I think he should start with a four. And, you know, like you said, as if we go at them and have a bit of a game and do what we did against Belgium, where we don't get a shellacking, but we're still involved in the game, then I think that remains a good outcome, even if we do end up losing the game, which obviously I hope we don't, because I do think this is a youthful and exciting team that we have out there. So I do think that, you know, it's not quite as black and white as maybe some people think, but maybe that's just me being mindless.
Sorry, Dave. Listeners won't appreciate this, but I'm recording this from the truck in a car park, and I have just seen the most amazing, reckless bit of driving imaginable. It's just like, what was this guy even thinking? I'm at a major junction. I'm in the car park at a major junction, and he's just reversing down the road. I'm wondering why he's getting attitude. I was a touch distracted. Sorry.
maybe he was driving down the road and he turned to his left and saw you and was like, bloody hell, that's Ruth from Coleman at Coleman Had a Dream. And now he's
oh
gone
my
to
word.
Pop.
Oh my word. Okay, all right. Just get the blood pressure back down again. That was incredible.
let's have a prediction from you, Ruth. What do you think the score is going to be?
I think it'll be 2-0 to Croatia, and I hate to admit I'd actually be pretty comfortable with that. I think the important thing is more how we play.
Yeah.
I think I want to see the plan, and I'm with you. I think it's important that it is the plan out of the blocks. I think it might be that we structure the midfield slightly different against Croatia because you can't ignore their quality. But I don't want to see us fundamentally playing a different style of play against Croatia than is what we're trying to establish. So I think it will be, I'm hoping that it will actually be quite telling how we set up against Croatia. I don't want us to see us doing something fundamentally different on Tuesday, because I don't like that. I don't think that helps us. We've got a tight window here. We've got to be on it. We can't expect players to be juggling how we want them to play. It's not fair. So I just want to see us established who we are. And yeah, if it's not smooth on Saturday, I don't think that's the end of the world. I just want to know where we're heading.
Yeah, I agree. I'm obviously going to Croatia, so I'm looking forward to a cool Friday night beer in the on the Riva, and hopefully a good Saturday afternoon as well. I think that I'm going to be optimistic. It's the start of a new campaign. I'm going to have a couple of days on the beers with my mates in Split. So I'm going to say we're going to nick an unlikely 1-1 draw. I think, you know, the new style, I think players will be out to prove what they're capable of. And I think, you know, we'll want to prove that they can be the next big name in the absence of Bale and Allen and so on. And I think that as a consequence of that, I think there'll be a lot of people out to prove a point, and we might surprise a couple of people. Let's very quick, because we aim to keep it under an hour, and it's in an hour now. We haven't said the word Latvia once, so let's talk about Latvia. 133rd in the world, as you say, Ruth, could not be a more different test, really, from Croatia. They've had a decent run in the Champions League recently, winning 4 games in a row, and that was made a 5 game winning run.
As Nations League. I don't think they're playing in the Champions League.
Is that what I said? Oh, God. I'm tired. That was made 5 wins in a row by beating Azerbaijan in a friendly. They have won once in an away tournament qualifier since September 2016, which was against Gibraltar. They've also had 3 red cards in the last 9 games, 2 in their last 2, in fact. So I think...
Well, we shouldn't hang too much on that. We're not great on that record either, are we?
Oh, no, that's true, actually. Well, ignore that. I'll delete that. Okay. I think they have quite an interesting squad. I think they have quite a settled 11 with not too many kind of varieties around that. They're big up and coming star as a guy called, oh God, I'm going to say this wrong, but I've tried to do this phonetically. Raymond Krolis is their up and coming star player. He is a teammate of Ethan Ampadu at Spezia in Serie A. Yanis he is someone who provides goals from midfield. He's got 11 goals, and his older brother, Davis, being his first name, is a striker who also has 11 goals as well. They are their kind of main threats. They tend to play a 4-4-2, although against bigger teams, they've been a little deeper and play 5 at the back and try and hit teams on the break. They've been quite solid, at times. They only tend to concede, for a team who are 133rd in the world, they only tend to concede 1 goal a game, which is not bad when you consider, look at our recent form, is probably not too different at that. So they are going to be tough to break down. They recently had clean sheets against Montenegro and Norway, obviously off of Haaland. So I don't think they're quite mugs. But you know, they are certainly a must-win team that we have to beat there, and I think we've got to go all out and all guns blazing and really try and put them to the sword to get the group off to a solid start.
Yeah, I mean that's actually much the more important game, ironically, isn't it? You know, there's we have to get 3 points from that game, and I think. I don't want to write off the Croatia game, but I think my mentality is quite different between the 2 games. I want to see us playing on the front foot. I mean, obviously we're at home, so the onus is on us a little bit, but I want to see us sort of being proactive in that Latvia game and really pushing what our new identity is and really be demonstrative of that.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, if we have any kind of hopes of qualifying for this tournament, as I think we do, I think we rightly do, then, you know, there's certain games that as a non-negotiable, I don't care how we do it, I don't care whether it's scruffy or whether it's 1-0 or 10-0, we've just got to go out and win that football match, and this is that. And I think, you know, to come away from these 4 games, 2 games, sorry, with 4 points would be incredible, but the minimum, absolute bare minimum is 3. We have to beat Latvia. We cannot have a slip-up like we did against Estonia in the last campaign. I know that worked out fine in the end, but we can't afford to do that in this circumstance because, you know, there's going to be tougher games to come, and I think we've got to go out and get three points off these. Is there anything about them that you're kind of worried about, or is it more about us on this day and just getting what we need to do?
I think it's more about us. They're obviously, like you said, a very settled team, and most of their players are domestic, and a lot of them play together at the Riga club. So they're very attuned and very settled, and they can be dangerous on the break. I don't think we can underestimate that. But we should not be scared of this opposition. It should be a much, much, much more about how we play.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as long as we go out and give a good account of ourselves, then I'm confident that we will get the result that we need from this. So yeah, I hope that we go out and do that, and we don't go back to 1992. Ruth, do you want to give us a prediction?
I think that one might be I'm going 2-0, but obviously to us in that game. So I've got 2-0s for both of the games.
I think this one will be, I was going to say 2-0 myself, so I never feel comfortable saying the exact same thing as you, because then it'll definitely not be right. But in the interest of being in the interest of being positive, I'm going to say we're going to win that one 3-1 is what I'm going to go for. I don't know where I've just plucked that from, but yes, I'm going to say 3-1. Yeah, as I say, in that second one, the result is the most important thing above anything else. We have had one more question from 1984 underscore Anna Binyaith on Twitter, who has asked us what we think our realistic expectations for this campaign are and what we wish for in this campaign. This feels like a starter at an awkward corporate day, but we are grateful for the question. Ruth, what? Well, let's start on a...
That's such a good description.
So let's start now. If you could tell me what your name and what your job is. No, if you can tell me what you think. Let's start off with realistic. What do you realistically expect?
I do think it's realistic that we're after second place in this league. I just think you've got to hit the ground running. It's not something you can. Obviously, Turkey is going to be the key opposition in those games. So it's obviously important that we're getting the 3 points against Latvia, but we should be looking to get second place in this group.
Yeah, I think so. I think realistic expectation. I think for me, I think it's important that we're still in it when we get down to mm-hmm. the final knock-ins. I don't want to be like we have been so many times in the past, where we go to the final games of the group phase. And there's nothing to play for. I really don't want to go back to that. And that's my realistic expectation, is that we're still fighting for it when it comes down to that last window. In terms of what I wish for, I think I speak for everyone saying, if we're wishing for things, you know, I wish that we beat Croatia 10-0 and we kind of turn everyone over and we romp to victory, which I know is not sensible. But yeah, I think real, you know, what I wish for, I think coming second is completely within our grasp and our remit and what we're capable of. And I also think that, you know, this is an exciting young team. There are fast, dynamic, exciting players there. Our big thing is we don't have the squad depth that we maybe did 2 years ago, especially in midfield. But I think there's still enough good, exciting, strong, talented players in that squad and in that team, especially in the first 13 or 14, who can really be match winners for us and difference makers for us. So in terms of what I wish for, I think getting to the tournament in Germany is well within our reach.
Yeah, agree.
Okay, we have talked for just over an hour, so we will wrap up there, unless there's anything else, Ruth, you wanted to add?
I just wanted to say how nice it was to see David Brooks coming on the field at the weekend.
Yes.
Just made the weekend, frankly. It was lovely.
Yeah, it really was. I also loved his interview afterwards. They said, was it a special moment for you? And he was just like, yeah, but you know, the game didn't go the way I wanted it to. And it was his instant thing was just like, well, no, we didn't win. So, and I loved that attitude. He wasn't being sentimental about it whatsoever. He was just straight down to business, which I massively enjoyed. But yeah, I think it's great to see. And hopefully, he will be involved in the next Wales squad after this one. Hopefully he'll get a bit more game time and mm-hmm. be back to his best. But yes, absolutely great to see Di Brooks back on the pitch. On that happy note, we will leave you. We'll be back after the games against Croatia and Latvia for a little bit of a review. If anyone sees us in Croatia, or it was like Qatar then. If you see us in Croatia, please do come and say hello. Always nice to chat to new people. We will finish off by saying, if you want to support us, please go to buymeacoffee.com/Coleman's Dream, where you can help keep this podcast free by giving us a small donation. And equally, you can go to bagsybags.com and use the code CHAD10 to get 10% off. Every time you use the code CHAD10, we get a little slice of that, which again goes to keeping this podcast up and running. Ruth, thank you very much for your time.
Good. It's nice to be chatting about real football. It's great.
It really is. I'm very much looking forward to the weekend and Tuesday night. Go on, the Welsh. We will speak to you soon. Thank you very much and goodbye.
Bye-bye.